Jamie told us that he has some really great makeup recommendations for when you go on the air.
I'm breaking the framework, Jamie's secret. Yeah.
To success.
I am totally getting that. That's not natural.
It's not natural.
This is just not my natural glow.
Sorry, we had to break that news to you, everybody. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Framework Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Ana Trujillo Limon, joined by my other host, Jamie Hopkins. Jamie, great to see you today.
Hey, Ana. I'm doing well today. I hope that we get to talk about makeup today. That's, I know everyone's surprised about that to hear at the beginning.
Yes, but we are going to talk about makeup today. And I'm really excited today. I am on the show with not one, but two of Investopedia's top 10 advisors. We have Elaine King with us. Elaine, thank you so much for making some time for Jamie and I.
Oh, no, thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, this will be a fun episode. This will be great. So, we always like to kick off talking about your first money memory. That always gets some really good answers. So tell us about your first money memory.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think I must have been 5 years old, probably. And my parents were very young. I think younger than average. Like my mom was 18. My dad was like 20. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted to teach me as soon as possible. And they decided to give me my first allowance. At that time, I think it was $1. And I'm going to date myself a little, but we had piggy banks that we actually had to break if we needed it. So I would put the coins. And that's my first. Oh, that and also my mom tells me, I can't remember because I was too young. I was crawling, not walking. And I would give the ice cream man the money, the bill, and then I would know how many coins he had to give me. So he said, my mom used to say, you weren't even walking and you're already like the transactions.
That's great. I love that story. So what was your first, did you break that piggy bank for something really cool? Or what was your first significant or big purchase?
Yeah, so at $1 a week, you know, I didn't have that much money.
And there wasn't compounding interest on those dollars.
Yeah, and I wanted to travel, so I barely had enough, I think by 7 or something like that, to buy a luggage. Mm-hmm. I didn't have enough to buy a ticket, but I had enough to buy a luggage. So that was my first purchase. I bought a little luggage. So
where was the first trip you took with that?
Oh, I went to Disney World.
I love it. In Florida.
Yes, in Florida. But I lived in Peru. So for me, that was, like another planet.
Yeah. So you ended up, you're in South Florida, right? Not Central Florida. Okay.
Yeah, I'm in South Florida. So yeah, that was really fun.
When you grew up in Peru, did they have like Disney on TV there? And was it the same or was it different? Because I think like some countries have like a different version of Mickey and stuff, right? Like it's not really the American one.
Yeah, they had the Spanish. I mean, at that time, there was a lot of, when you translate and then they open their mouth and they're talking. Yeah. That was very uncomfortable. dubbed, I guess it's called.
Yeah.
I don't think they had those words underneath. And plus, little kids couldn't read that fast. I think it was translated.
The dubbing has gotten really sophisticated, I think, over time. Like now you watch all these foreign shows and you watch them in English and it's like, it looks like they're saying what they're saying. It's crazy.
Yeah. And some of the shows on Netflix, when you click the like language thing, there's like so many languages and you're like, that's really impressive. And I assume a lot of that's AI now. They're able to kind of match it and speed up the words a little faster to meet the like movement. Right.
Yeah. It's exciting. It gives you a lot more options to waste your time watching shows because there's so many more interesting shows now than there just were even like 5 years ago.
And one thing that I just thought about, maybe you already thought about it, but I wanted to practice my French. And so I thought, okay, I don't have anybody to practice with. So I asked Alexa, do you speak French? And she said, yes. So I'm going to start. So she's I'm going to start practicing.
Oh, I love it.
You have to change the settings, but or Waze. You know, Waze can give you directions in another language. So at least, you know,
start hearing it.
Yeah.
So are you planning to go to France to practice your French?
One day.
One day. Yeah.
One day.
Well, let me know. I want to hitch a ride.
Okay, wonderful. We can exchange a house there and take care of some pets.
Yeah. Oh, I've read like was there a movie with Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet where they exchange houses?
They do. Holiday.
Oh, I love that movie. It's nice. Yeah. I don't think anybody would want my house, but yeah.
And Jack Black and who's the other one in there?
Jude Law.
Jude Law. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I love that movie. So yeah, we'll recreate our own version of that movie on the Holiday.
Okay.
I'll have to use your house, Elaine, though.
Maybe. Are you Miami. In this trip too?
Well, yes. I do really want to go to France. That's on my list of top three places I want to go next. So Nova Scotia is up there. I'd really like to go to Nova Scotia. I'd really like to go to France. And then I want to go to Scotland. I went to Ireland this last year, and it also made me want to go. Like, I loved it, and it made me want to go to Scotland, too. So those are my three.
That's amazing. I think that would be really cool to have, like, three highly conscious, you know, financial people. I mean, it would be so much fun to see how we're managing the money and how we're saving and how we pay, you know, like we would probably be finding ways to go. For example, in Italy, I think the first Sundays of every month, it's like free to go to the Colosseum and all the museums. Mm-hmm. So we can probably hack a lot of things and get our way and stretch our plan.
These are amazing ideas. And I'm seeing a framework series in the future. And Elaine, you're coming on as a co-host, and we'll get Brian Money to get it sponsored. All right, that's in the books. It's in the works.
No, seriously. Because
I could get behind that.
Like, for example, I'm not a foodie, right? So foodies can give you tips on where to go to Scotland. But I can give you tips on how to save money when you go to Scotland. We can do a sidebar on that.
Yeah, and I would like to find some nice trails to run. And so Jamie's he has the foodie stuff covered. Mm-hmm. You have the financial planning stuff covered, and I've got the trail running stuff covered. So right, it's a plan. We'll talk offline. We'll talk more about that. Okay, right on.
Everybody's listening and wants to join us.
We're looking for sponsors, everybody.
it's an okay segue here, right? So we're gonna go from traveling, and then Elaine, you've lived in a lot of different places, right? So how did you start off your life in Peru, and then who did you want to be when you grew up, right? Because it probably wasn't Investopedia top advisor for, you know, the 5-year-old getting $1 a week to go to Disney.
Oh, yeah. No, I wanted to, well, when I was 11, I went to elementary in Canada. Nice. I don't think I wanted to be I didn't remember of wanting to be anything, maybe as a snow skier, because at that time all I did was snow skiing. But then at 11, I moved to Mexico, and there was a place called Reino Aventura, which is like Disney World, and they had dolphins. And I thought, oh my God, this would be so cool. I want to be a dolphin trainer. So I thought, well, maybe I can be a vet. And then I joined the choir of the church. And then I thought, well, it'd be great to be a singer. And then, you know, I wanted to be so many different things, an archaeologist also when I moved to Boston. Being from Peru, Machu Picchu and all that stuff, I used to subscribe to Archaeologist Digest. So when it was time to go to college, I asked my dad, I don't know what to study. What should I study? I like everything. And he said, well, business is the base and finance is, you're going to need finance. So that's why I ended up studying.
Yeah.
That's great.
But yeah. So what about you? How did you get into finance?
Go ahead, Jane.
Well, I would have talked about some of the other stuff first. So the dolphin stuff, I run into so many people that want to be dolphin trainers. One of the girls that I swam with, well, now a woman, but I guess kind of at college, you're right on that line. One of my the other women on my college swim team, Lauren Taft, who I think might be Lauren Simmons now. I don't know what her last name is, but she did get married. She went and was a dolphin trainer and stuff at SeaWorld in Florida. So like, that I do know somebody that, you know, was a swimmer and went that path and trained dolphins. So she did love it too. I visited her a couple of times after school down there, and it was pretty cool. But also, like, I grew up loving Indiana Jones, and I feel like there was probably some point in my life where I was like, I'm going to be an archaeologist. And then, like, you grow up and, like, there aren't really that many archaeologists. Like, it's a job, but, like, I don't think that there's not as lot as you're led to believe as like a kid, because like half the cartoons are archaeologists, right? Or like Mickey will be an archaeologist and go explore. But you grow up and like, there aren't that many.
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah. And I think I was trying to remember why did I wanted to be an archaeologist. And it's because when I was in Peru, I used to play golf in, it's called Cieneguilla. It's like by the mountains. And the caddies used to tell me that on the weekends, they used to find a lot of ruins from the Incas up in the mountains. And I was fascinated by it. And they found huacos and things like that. And I thought, wow, how cool would it be? I was too little to even have an authority to look for it.
Yeah.
But that just, you know, when you're a kid, you like everything, I think.
Yeah.
It's true. Is Indiana Jones an archaeologist? I've never seen any of the Indiana Jones movies, and I know I'm going to get flack for that.
Yeah. Broderick's not here to give you flack for that one either. Right. There's a Star Wars guy.
Yeah. I got it from my husband, Jamie. He wanted to go see the Indiana Jones movie. And I'm like, I'm not interested. But now that I know he's an archaeologist, maybe I will check it out.
Yeah, I took my husband on his birthday to see in IMAX.
Okay, then maybe. We're still celebrating my husband's birthday. It's like a two-week affair. Well, good. I'm still celebrating it. I don't know if he is. I'll take him to Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
He's an archaeologist that fights Nazis. There's a lot of good that, you know, he finds new world treasures and uncovers things and fights Nazis. So that's basically his job. Yeah.
Okay. I'm in. I'm going to go check it out. Right. You convinced me. Sold.
Well, we could actually answer the question because that's one of the segments now, Anna, which is we're allowed to be asked questions. So we could just go to that and use
this. Yeah, let's do that. So Elaine, our producer, she had this great idea to give our guests the opportunity to flip the script and ask us a question. So we'll use that as your question, if that's cool.
Unless you want another question.
No.
Okay, right on. Go ahead, Jamie.
All right. I'll try to go fast because I have a whole story, but it takes too long. Short answer is my mom had a big impact on me and my dad passing away on like wanting to understand personal finances more. And then one pivotal moment was I got to work on one of Bernie Madoff's cases when I was in the legal world in the appellate division. And that kind of brought some of just like my inquisitiveness to the personal finance and investment management and investor world. And like, it just kind of led down a path after that. But like those two pieces, you know, if you just think about like core pivotal pieces, like those are two of the big ones that kind of helped steer me into this direction long term.
Wow, that's so interesting.
And then for me, I kind of fell into it. I was laid off from a job as an editor at a magazine, and I found the Financial Planning Association. They were looking for an editor for their journal, Financial Planning, and I didn't know anything about money or anything about this space, and it was a huge learning experience. And I was like, oh, this information would have been really helpful for me when I was younger. If I had known all this stuff, I would have made so many different decisions. So it's kind of been in a role of supporting advisors and, you know, creating content for them. And it's been very impactful. So that's how I got into it.
Wow. Oh, interesting. One, Jamie was from the family that happened. And well, it's a change of events, right, Anna? And in your case is you were looking for a job, similar to me too. I was also looking for a job and I thought, okay, why not?
So yeah, Elaine, let's go into that. So how did you kind of come to found your own firm?
Okay. So after a lot of years in corporate, this is recorded, right? So I can, no, I'm just kidding.
It's recorded.
Okay. So after being in the corporate world and really wanting to spend more time with my clients and really going above and beyond, and I couldn't because in the corporate world, because I understand, you know, most big companies, they have a script and you have to stay inside the box. And at a certain time in your life, I think if you want to do a little more, you really have to create your own because if I want to spend, you know, I haven't, but if I want to spend 10 hours with a client, I don't think I could have. And there's a lot of compliance and everything that you need to do, not because it's wrong, but because if you're, you know, one of 5,000 consultants or one of 5,000 employees, you need to follow certain rules. And I follow rules, but I just wanted to have a little more creativity in the space. So in 2013, I founded Family Money Matters as a 501c3, as a nonprofit, because I was still in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. And I figured, you know, I can handle it. And then in 2017 is when I let go of my corporate career, I guess, and I went 100% into consulting and financial planning on my own. But it took a lot. I mean, it was scary. It's not easy, but it's very rewarding. I have to say, if anybody's hearing, I mean, time is the first thing you need to conquer. And when you work on your own.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's worked out for you. You've had a lot of accolades in your life and been recognized even as, you know, People Magazine's 25 Influential Hispanic Women, and other things like that. So of those awards and recognitions, which one has meant the most to you and why?
Wow. Well, the People Magazine one was very, it meant a lot to me because it wasn't in the area that I was, you know, most of my energy I've spent in the nonprofit world, like helping the community, financial education, helping homeless shelters. And then when I had the opportunity to actually go into the industry, I thought, well, who can I help better? And it's the women. The women are the ones, I think, that need more help, not because they can't help themselves, but because we as women need to have a little more information than men to make decisions. And I saw the crisis in 2008, how most women needed just a little bit of help to get up. And so, and then I got that recognition for all my contributions in the community. And I thought, okay, I'm in the right path. But that meant a lot to me because it just gave me a little more certainty that I was in the right career, or I was following my passion. So that meant a lot. And also the community award. I got a Tumi Award for my impact in the community, and that's a Peruvian-based award. And of course, this one, it's amazing. I don't know. It's just a draw of a luck, too.
Do you like that side of the work, too? I know we're going to talk a little bit about it, but like media and brand building and the kind of promotional aspect of the work, right? And I guess like, do you like it, and where do you see the value of it throughout your career now? And like, does it help you impact more people? How do you view that?
I think on a personal level, it helps me with my confidence. Mm-hmm. Because working for 20 years in the corporate world, not because I hide behind a logo, but I used to represent a logo, right? So I wasn't Elaine King, the financial planner. I was Elaine King, employee of ABNC. And I never had to charge, and I never had to promote myself. So the branding part actually came to be because I think the first time I was at Salomon Smith Barney and they merged. The second time, the bank that I was in also merged. And then the third time the bank got acquired. So somebody told me, Elaine, you kill yourself for these companies and they're very important. But at some point in time, you need to work on your brand, not to, you know, I don't know, look pretty in front of TV, but it's because you're going to stand alone when a hurricane hits. What you have is your value added, right? So you need to work on your certifications, your education. Yes, PR helps. And that's when the book came along because I wanted to help more people and I didn't know how because I helped just the 20% of the bank that brought the 80% of the profits. I couldn't help 100% of the people and I wanted to help more people. And I mean, unconsciously, I guess it helped me with the brand. But Jamie, I think everybody should, regardless in what stage in your life you are and who you're working with or for, you should always try to differentiate yourself. Mm-hmm. I learned early on that I had to differentiate myself. I don't think you have to. You just need to find your uniqueness. Everybody's unique. That's why I love this financial planning community, because I don't think we compete with each other. I think we complement each other. Mm-hmm. You know, my client or your client may not be my client, and my client may not be your client, right? So I don't know. I just think that we just need to be really good at our niche.
Yeah. And Elaine, you're really good at the, you know, you're on Telemundo last week when we chatted a little bit. And so you have a lot of different media appearances, and that stuff's really nerve-wracking for a lot of people. Like, I get very hyped up before these episodes too and get a little nervous. What's your advice to people to kind of get better at it and to, you know, be more polished and professional, like the way you are?
Wow, thank you. Okay, so I'll give you three tips. One of them is, don't worry about the camera. Think about the people you're going to impact and the lives you're going to change. And that comes from your heart, and people can hear your passion, I think. Mm-hmm. Number two is, always put a percentage of your earnings into marketing. When the pandemic hit, when there was a crisis in 2008, the one thing that I did not stop was marketing. Marketing is very important. There's always people out there that know more than you. That's one thing I tell the marketing people I work with. I'm like, marketing, for me, it takes too much time. So what do I mean by that? When I had my first opportunity to talk in People in Español, that was like in 2013, I think, I hired a speaking coach, and we use that speech as a class of drama, I guess, or acting. So when I had to talk about, you know, your, what do you think? I mean, like, how do you move your hands? How do you move your body? She even said, when you walk in the stage, Elaine, take off your jacket. And that's what I did. So, you know, she helped me a lot, and project the voice. And then the third thing is, I think I've been lucky and grateful to the media because I always position them in a high place. Like, I always like to go above and beyond. And even if it's not me, I always suggest other people and try to help them develop the story. So instead of just answering the question when the media calls me, I say, What is the objective? Do you need more help here? Do you need more help there? Like, always being helpful, because at the end, the media is helping the community. And the more you can help them as a financial planner, I think the better message, you know, the public is going to get.
So. Elaine, I think that that's a really good message here that goes probably broader than that. I've always tried to do that too with, and I imagine you do this also. It's like, when people come in looking for help as like a client, if they're not a good client for you, which you brought up before too, like, I always try to like suggest other people that they might work better with. And, you know, it's not always a Carson advisor should be the person that helps you. I send people out to other people because I think they're a better fit or location or the type of person they'll connect with. And mm-hmm. I always found the same thing, like media, a lot of the best media relations are ones that I've helped get a different person to, right? Not just like me doing well, but you help mm-hmm. along. And I think that's true for our clients or anybody that reaches out, COI. So I think that's a really astute lesson and message today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'll tell you a story so I can just illustrate my point. One time the Financial Times called me and I thought, oh my God, the Financial Times. And I noticed that the reporter didn't know what she was really asking. So then I said, are you the financial reporter for financial planning? And she said, actually, no, the person is out sick and I specialize in real estate. So today I have to cover this topic. And I said, do you even know like what a 401k is? Or do you know what you're asking? And she's like, no. And I said, well, let me tell you a little bit about it. So when you write the article, you know, it makes a little more sense and you know what to ask, because the questions she was asking, they weren't making too much sense. So always get curious with the media, because that person called me again. You know, you want to make friends with them. One thing though, don't say too much. I got in trouble for that early in my career. So just answer the question, but also get curious about the objective. Like, don't say too much personal stuff.
Yeah. As a former reporter, that's all very refreshing. Sometimes people aren't so nice or so curious or so helpful. So I love to hear this conversation. But let's get to what we're talking about before we got online, Jamie and Elaine. Jamie told us that he has some really great makeup recommendations for when you go on the air.
We're breaking the air framework,
Jamie's secret.
Yeah.
To success.
I am totally getting
that's not natural. not natural.
This is just not my natural glow.
Sorry, we had to break that news to you, everybody.
It is actually today. It just depends on how I look and how shiny I look in that day. So I'm not too shiny. That's the main thing. So like, I start going on NBC a lot for a while, and like I would get shiny, and like I thought the first time I went, like they'll have like makeup people for you when you go on TV, and they don't, and they're like you show up and like they don't have anything for your hair. My hair is all curly. I like look like a total mess, and I was like, I thought they're gonna make me look better. So then I ended up with like Revlon Photo Ready, which I guess is just like a powder, but like I do that on my forehead and stuff, so I don't get shiny on TV. I don't really bother for the podcast because I it's trouble enough for me to look at the dot, so I'm not looking off into space on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about my makeup on the podcast, but on TV I usually do.
The shine is a problem for me too, and I have these little like they're natural papers that kind of to blot the shine. Blot. So yeah, if you notice, if you watch these videos, I'm pretty shiny. So Elaine, do you have any secret tips for going on TV for our listeners?
Oh, wow. Well, I don't really like makeup too much. So therefore, what you see is like, I just, you know, I kind of made it up and I kind of feel it. But in my case, mascara, I'm allergic to mascara. So I have to like only once a month, I think I wear it. So I have to kind of make up the mascara illusion with like my eyeliner, or I like right now I put like a how do you say, like not water, but it's not color, just so it looks a little, so you could see my eyelashes a little. And the other thing that I didn't used to use, and Mac, here's a good tip, financial planning. Go to Macy's and sit on the Mac seat when it's not busy and get a free makeup. That's how I learned what, you know, the color of the lipstick and all that stuff. I think that's a deal because you come out, you know, ready to party. And also you can say, okay, what are the absolute essentials that you need? So that's how I got my lipstick and the color. You know, it's just a gloss and it looks really good, I think.
Yeah, it does.
There is a good point about that, which I don't know that the makeup to all the advisors is super useful to everybody listening, but there is a useful tie back here. So I think that was a useful one. But you can also get your colors done by places too. So like I know that
you wear?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So like, that's actually a really interesting thing too, is like, what colors do you kind of mesh well the best with? Oh. And they'll actually give you like a palette that is your color scheme. And so like Mina and I at Carson have a very similar, oddly, like our palette scheme for colors ended up very similar. And it doesn't mean that everybody looks the same that ends up with the same palette schemes, but they will actually match colors to you out there on like what to wear. So like some people actually do look better in like white shirts. Other people look better in lavender shirts and red shirts. And so you can actually. Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
Sorry,
one thing I couldn't do is wear patterns. That's what I've been told.
All I wear is black. So maybe I'll try that and do something different. The black and the red lipstick and the earrings, that's all I got going. So I'm going to try that. That's going to be.
You look great, Anna. You always look great. And the lipstick, all put together. I try to wear white because I really don't know what other colors look good on me. So
I think that's why the black for me, because like black always looks good. It does. I could gain a little weight. I could. It's all good. But anyways, we'll get back on track. We got off track there for a second. But Elaine, I kind of wanted to bring it back to, you know, you're a big advocate for financial literacy and you offer a lot of classes and things like that to kind of educate the community. And that's come up a few times about your passion for helping people. But talk to us a little bit about that work and what that means to you.
Oh, wow. Well, that is my legacy. That's how I got started. And I think that was my jump, like how, you know, when you try to jump to the water and you're like, do I jump? Do I not jump? This is it. When I start realizing that I was taking off from my vacation time when I was working at the financial institutions and I was doing financial literacy for nonprofits and helping others with finance, I was like, hold on a second. I'm taking my vacation to do what I do for work. I think this is my passion. So, I really my mom was a kindergarten teacher, and I really like kids. I don't have kids, but I really like kids in the sense of like the kindergarten kids, like 5-year-olds. And financial education for me made a full circle when I was working with my financial planning clients, the adult ones that had a lot of money. And in some cases, they wouldn't hear or, well, they would hear, but they wouldn't follow my advice. And they would have kids. And I thought, okay, can I meet the kids? Can I talk to your kids? Can I do a workshop for your kids? And then when I started working with kids, I thought, oh my God, this is another way to talk to my clients about financial planning. Because if it was specifically this guy that said, Elaine, you have to tell me how much I need to make so I can work on your, you know, whatever this plan, Monte Carlo, whatever. Tell me how much I need to make. And I said, no, we need to make a budget. He said, you're not going to make me do a budget. And I said, okay, how old are your kids? They're teenagers. So I start talking to their teenagers and I said, do you know what a budget is? Like, no, my dad hasn't taught me. And I said, of course. So let me teach you what a budget is. And I was able to get to the client through the teenagers that wanted to do a budget. And so, you know what I'm saying? So that's when I
Jedi started. Mind tricks.
No, it's all about, it's about family systems and family therapy. I have a postgraduate on it and I didn't even know. But when I was studying for it, I thought, okay, if you can't do it from the top down, you should do it from the bottom up. It happens to me a lot too when I'm working with family businesses and the grandparents don't want to follow certain, you know, policies. And then I can talk to the siblings or the cousins and align them so they can talk to the parents. And then in turn, the parents can teach the third generation as opposed to the third generation teach the grandparents. Mm-hmm. So it's really fascinating. I love the family systems model because we're all connected emotionally and money has so much emotion. So so anyway, I hope that helps my financial literacy. But how do I get into it? Because I just want the world to see money as a positive force. I've seen it being destructive, you know, the son that kills a mother or that kills the father because there's no will, or, you know, the sibling that doesn't talk to the other one for money reasons, or the mother that died and couldn't sell the house. I mean, there's so many things like that. And I'm a problem solver. So when I see that, it's like, or a couple that loved each other for so many years and will give their life to each other and then they divorce because of money. So there's so much destruction around money. And I want to, you know, as much as I can just, you know, try to solve that and make money a positive force in the world so it could be constructive and not destructive. So that's my driving force. And that's why I like to help the community with that. In any shape or form I can.
And as we wind down, I wanted to make sure we got this question in, and it was, you know, what are some misconceptions the industry has about the Latino community in general, and how can it better reach us both as clients and as employees?
Well, I think one of the misconceptions is that because we speak Spanish, we're all the same. Mm-hmm. There are subcultures within countries. Yes, we all speak Spanish and we love family and we're passionate about, you know, things. And we tend to be really outgoing. I mean, if I want to generalize Latinos. However, we all come from different specific areas. So, for example, somebody from, I don't know, I'm from Peru, right? So I may be different than somebody from the Caribbean or somebody from Mexico or somebody from Chile. And why is that? Because of history. Because we had different types of immigrants. In Peru, we have a lot of Chinese immigrants. We have a lot of Japanese immigrants. In Chile, there were a lot of Germans. In Brazil, there were a lot of Portuguese. So culture and history has a lot to do with how you see life. And trying to treat all of us the same may not work from a financial planning point of view. I'm talking to the advisor, right? So a Colombian might not be the same as a Venezuelan or a Panamanian, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very important to understand that. But what are some misconceptions? The culture, the language, the food. I mean, that's the biggest misconception. A lot of people think tacos are everywhere, but no. And arepas are from, you know, the Caribbean. No, I mean, and pisco is from Chile. No, pisco is from Peru. So, yeah, I studied international business. So there's a lot of faux pas that a lot of people do. I would say get curious about the culture and the country itself, because we look the same, but we're all from different, like I have Chinese and British in my blood. And I remember, I'll give you a quick example. I was working with a Colombian family and everybody was hugging me. And I thought, well, you know, que cariñosos, are so, you know, they're so Latin. And then the next Colombian family was like, hello, you know, and I said, wow, but they're from Colombia. Well, they're German descendant. And, you know, you got to do a little bit of due diligence with the families just because they're from Colombia. You know, that doesn't mean they're going to be hugging you and kissing you.
Yeah. And that's good to have that like curiosity about cultures for all different types of clients. When you like, we had this in one of my classes, there was this video our professor showed us, and it was this man, and he was in China, I believe, and he ordered like a soup, and he ate it all. And to his host, that was like, oh, he's still hungry, give him more. And so they kept bringing him bigger and bigger dishes of soup, and he kept having to eat them all. And he was like, okay, there's something not right here. Or like one was in Japan where I guess if you get a hole in one, you buy everybody a gift, a very expensive gift or something.
No, I'm not playing golf there.
somebody got a hole in one and everybody was celebrating. He's like, why is everybody else celebrating? Oh, because you have to buy them all a gift now. But anyways, that's just like a fun side note to that, speaks to that importance of cultural competency in general. So I love that. I love that perspective. So Jamie, as we wind down, do you have, go ahead.
Yeah. And that's why I don't play golf. That's it. So
yeah, I don't, sounds like you play golf though, Elaine.
Yeah, that's my sport.
Yeah. So don't play in Japan there or know that don't get a hole in one.
I got a hole in one. I don't remember where.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've tried to play golf a few times. It's not for me. Not good at it. And that's okay. I accept that. Accept defeat. But Jamie, as we wind down, do you have other questions?
No, I'll just do the last one then. So okay. Elaine, we like to ask people at the end here this kind of final question, which is what does finding your freedom mean to you?
Oh, wow. What a great question. Finding my freedom is being the owner of my time and deciding what to do. And that what I decide to do is what I like to do. I mean, I can give you an example. The other Friday, I took off half a day and I went in the boat to the ocean and we saw dolphins and just driving the boat. It's a small boat in the ocean, in the blue ocean, and just jumping off that for me was complete freedom, looking at the horizon. And I only do it on the Friday afternoon because on Saturdays, all these crazy people go out. And then, you know, in Florida, I don't know if in all those states, you don't need a license and it's so dangerous. So,
well, that's a beautiful answer. Yeah.
So, yeah. And doing what I think is right with a client. Sometimes it's not finance. Sometimes it's encouraging them to find that next job or to update their resume or to talk to their kids about finance or to give them an allowance. Anyway, I think that's freedom for me. So thank you for that question. That's an awesome question. I would like to ask that back.
Oh, that's a good one. It changes for me a lot. Like, I don't know if that's the same for you, Jamie, but I think freedom for me is being in a position to be able to give back to the next generation. Cause I also don't have kids, Elaine, but like, I'm very generous with my nieces and nephews, and I feel like sometimes some of them love me because I'm their tia and they love to hang out with me, and you know, the other ones, some of them love me because I buy them stuff, and that's okay too. I get it. But like, hopefully to be in that position to give back to them where we're able to forge that relationship in the future and kind of put them on, give them my good advice, the little good advice that I do have. Go ahead, Jamie. Cool.
Yeah, mine's mostly stayed the same since I've thought about this. And it's that ability to wake up and control my day. And that's kind of how I view mine, which, yeah, there's obviously more that you can go into that, but that's like the general piece of it.
Yeah. And do I have time to ask a question?
Sure.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious, Jamie, what is that boxing glove doing in the back?
Okay.
there we go.
So it is. And that's the point of it. That's the only reason it exists there. So people ask about it. So it's a Mike Tyson. It's a Mike Tyson signed glove. And it's just a talking point. Same reason that the Nintendo was up there too. So I've got like gamers and sports people, and they ask me about both all the time. They're just conversational pieces at this point. So I have Nintendo, Mario 1, 2, 3, and Duck Hunt up there, and then a Mike Tyson signed glove right here. So that is my background. I do have some other cool stuff back here. I've got a bobblehead of me, which is not as cool as a Mike Tyson glove. I've got a treasure chest here with all types of stuff in it that sometimes I pull out as surprises things. So yeah, it's a good backdrop here of things.
Wow. And I thought you had that boxing glove to, you know, hit your punching bag when things didn't go your way.
Yeah, no, I don't have a punching bag anymore. In law school, I got a heavy bag and actually put it in my, my bedroom. So it was a little weird, but it did fit. I like found a way to get it in there. I did like that, but it was loud. So like in a condo, eventually I got rid of it because it was really loud. Like I think it's super annoying to everybody around.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I used to box at 6 a.m. when I was in the corporate world.
Yeah.
So I would just go in.
Yeah. I like boxing.
I love boxing. I'm not great at it. And it's funny because like, my husband does like a little boxing class, like he's a trainer. And so I go to his boxing. He bought me these really cool gloves. And so we go and I feel really cool, right? Like I'm moving really fast. And then he did a video of me. And I was like, I look like I'm going in slow motion. I'm not very fast at all. I'm not as athletic as I used to be. But anyways, so I digress. We could talk about this all
day.
Well,
we did. If you're looking for a past episode that we did have the world champion boxer on here, Crawford. He's from Omaha. And he actually just won again, 2 weeks ago from our recording of this?
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago.
About two weeks ago.
That was a great fight, too. I don't know if y'all saw it, but it was really good.
Terrence Crawford. He's amazing.
I'm honored.
Yeah.
I'm on that list.
Elaine, we only have stars on this show. So we're really happy that you're able to join us today and share your wisdom and your knowledge. And we want to be mindful of your time. So I just wanted to thank you again for taking some time for Jamie and I and Team Framework. And thank you, Jamie. Always great to see you.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Anna. Thank you all for listening.
Yes, and thank you everybody else for tuning into this week's episode of Framework. Don't forget to subscribe so you'd never miss an episode.